If you could only sell the car for $20,000, let's go back to the appreciation rate. Instead of the $24,000, we would put $20,000. So we have $20,000 minus 32,000 over 32,000. And now the appreciation rate is negative 37.5% instead of negative 25%. So it depreciates more. And now the profitability, when we go back to that formula, would be 37.5 minus 37.5 minus 5, or negative 5%. So it would say we're better off leasing. So I think that makes sense, that if the resale value is going down, but they give you the same lease rate, then you're better off leasing it. If the car is going to be worth less by the time you would otherwise sell it, you should just go ahead and lease it or rent it. Okay, so we'll have a lot more examples. One of your assignments is a set of problems in calculating these rent versus buy calculations. So you'll get used to how the rent, the appreciation rate, the price, and the interest rate, how they all relate to one another. And that's what I want to get across. Now I want to talk about some more concepts that you can bring out when you talk about using the rent-buy formula and talking about capital and so on. First question you might ask is, well, suppose you didn't need to borrow the money to buy your capital equipment. Let's say you're the movie theater and you need to buy your movie projector, seats, whatever. But suppose you had a lot of money in the bank and you did not need to borrow the money. Should you still use an interest rate in deciding whether or not to make the decision? And the answer is yes, and that is due to an important concept called opportunity cost. Even though you don't have to borrow the money, if you didn't use the money in the bank to buy seats for the theater or buy a movie projector, you could use that money for other things. You could earn interest on that money. So taking that money out of the bank and losing the interest that you would have earned by keeping the money in the bank is as much a cost as the explicit cost that you would have if you had to go out and borrow the money. So that's, again, a very important concept in economics, opportunity cost. Another way it shows up with the hurricane. Repairing the damage caused by Hurricane Katrina, it's going to create demand for all sorts of goods and services. People are going to have to buy wood and building materials to rebuild things. They're going to, need to buy all sorts of cleaning materials to clean things up. Isn't that a good thing that people are going to be buying all these goods and services? The answer is no, because of opportunity costs. What could those goods have been doing if those building materials hadn't been needed to repair houses in New Orleans and in the rest of the Gulf Coast? Those building materials could have been used to build new houses or additions to existing houses and so on. So there is an opportunity cost, and so we should not look at the extra demand caused by a hurricane as anything that's good. So let's do the definition of opportunity cost. An opportunity cost is what you must give up in order to have something. An alternative definition tries to say the same thing, maybe a little more technically, is that the opportunity cost of getting something is the value of the next best thing that the resources could have been used for. For example, every time I go to the airport, I see all those Transportation Security Agency officials, or staff at the airport. Lots and lots of airport security personnel. I always think about opportunity cost. What other things could those people be doing? They could be investigating shipping containers. They could be trying to infiltrate terrorist groups. They could be working at the border. I mean, there just seem to be so many things that you could be doing other than checking everyone and everything at airports. So I always think that the opportunity cost of putting a lot of people at the airports has got to be high. Another example, what do you have to give up in order to go to a movie? That's the opportunity cost. And you have to give up both time and money. You're giving up a couple hours of your time and you're giving up money. And you would want to take both those opportunity costs into account. The money you could have spent on something else and the time you could have spent doing something else. That's what it means by opportunity cost. Another example is medical checkups. Even if the medical checkup were free and caused no discomfort, you still wouldn't go once a week for a medical checkup. Why not? If it was free? Well, because it takes time, and that's an opportunity cost. So time is in some sense a fundamental opportunity cost, that giving up time for something. Okay, now I want to go back to and ask a question. Why should profitability usually be close to zero in these profitability calculations? So in the rent buy formula, we calculate what I call profitability, the profitability of buying. I say it's the rental rate plus the appreciation rate minus the interest cost. And why should that usually be close to zero? And I'm going to give an argument that's based on a concept called arbitrage. So arbitrage is another important concept we're trying to get at. The definition of arbitrage is to take advantage of a discrepancy in prices by buying the good where it is cheap and selling it where it is expensive. So in order to be able to engage in arbitrage, you have to find a situation in which there's a discrepancy in prices. There's a mix-up somehow, and something is definitely cheaper in one place and more expensive in the other, and you're able to buy it in the cheap place and sell it in more expensive. So, for example, somebody who's supplying computer programming services, developing software, if they can hire computer programmers in Romania for $5 an hour and sell their services in the U.S. for $40 an hour, then that's an example of arbitrage. That is, in Romania, computer programming services might go for $5 an hour, in the U.S. they go for $40 an hour, and if you can pull it off, communicating with the Romanians and getting them to do the right work, then there's an arbitrage. In the context of the rent buy formula, arbitrage means that when renting is cheap, what you should do is sell your house and rent it from whoever buys it. And I actually know of one economist in the Washington, D.C. area who thinks that renting is cheap, house prices have gotten out of hand, and I think more than a year ago he sold his house and is renting and is just waiting for house prices to come down because he believes that there's rent buy arbitrage on the rent side. Now, at other times, you might believe that there's rent buy arbitrage. By the way, I don't agree with that economist, but anyway, it's interesting that he's putting his money where his mouth is, so to speak. Another form of rent buy arbitrage, the opposite side, is when you think that prices are cheap and rents are expensive. So when renting is expensive, then you can take advantage of that by buying as many houses as you can and renting them out to people. And the rent plus the appreciation should more than cover the price of the house, and so you should make a profit. So when renting is really cheap, people will sell houses, and when renting is really expensive, they'll buy houses. And that action, those attempts at arbitrage will cause the price discrepancy, if there is one, to go away, so that the profitability formula will always show something close to zero, or else arbitragers will step in and they'll buy low and sell high until the discrepancy goes away. The concept of rent buy arbitrage and the rent buy profitability formula, the rent versus buy profitability formula, can be used to answer the question, is there a housing bubble? Because if there is a housing bubble, we should be able to spot some unreasonable relationships using the rent versus buy formula. Now, the idea of a housing bubble, the idea is that somehow house prices have just gotten way out of hand. Speculators are have been bidding up the price of houses to unreasonable levels. And that's been a lot in the news lately. I think every major newspaper has written a story about the possibility that there's a housing bubble. Alan Greenspan, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board and the most important economic policymaker in the country, recently had made some remarks that people thought interpreted as saying that he was worried about a housing bubble. So let's look into that using our formula. These are some numbers based on what was going on in my neighborhood about a year ago. Things were, excuse me, a little different, but I think it's pretty much the same now. So our houses in my neighborhood overpriced. A few years ago, a typical house cost $350,000, and that same house now sells for $600,000. Now that same house rents for about $2,000 a month, and the mortgage interest rate is 6%. With that, we have almost all the information we need to look to use the profitability formula. Okay, first though, we need to have an annual rental rate because we don't want to be comparing monthly rentals to annual interest cost. So the annual rental rate, we take the $2,000 monthly rent and multiply by 12. So we have $24,000 a year in rent. So if you owned this house and you rented it out to somebody, you would collect, for $2,000 a month, you would collect $24,000 a year in rent. So the rental rate is, the annual rental rate is that $24,000 divided by the price of the house, which is $600,000. And if you do that division, then the rental rate will be 0.04 or 4%. So now we have our profitability formula. Profitability equals rental rate plus appreciation rate minus interest cost. I've got a question mark for the appreciation rate because we don't know what that is. But the profitability rate is equal to 4%, which is our rental rate plus question mark, minus 6%, which is the interest rate. So your the question is, how much will housing prices keep going up? If they go up at 2% per year, then the profitability will be exactly zero, and the rent buy analysis is break even. There's no arbitrage in either buying or renting. If we expect house prices to go up faster than 2% a year, let's say 4% a year, then the profitability is positive and we should buy, or the rent buy arbitrage signal is to buy. If we expect slower appreciation rate, let's say we expect home prices not to go up at all, expect it to be zero, then the profitability is 4% minus 6% or negative 2%, and that would say that the profitability of buying is negative and we should do what that economist I mentioned earlier did and sell your house if you're in one and rent it instead. So there would be a rent buy arbitrage in favor of renting if we expected no appreciation. So how does that help us decide whether or not there's a bubble? Well, a bubble is when the only way that buying is profitable is if the appreciation rate is unrealistically high. That is, if I had to put something in for that question mark that was an unrealistically high rate of future appreciation, then that would tell you there's a bubble. So if it took a 5% appreciation rate or a 10% appreciation rate to make buying profitable, then that's be a sign that it's a bubble. Having to put a figure in there like 2% to me doesn't suggest that there's a bubble, because 2% is almost the overall economy-wide rate of inflation. So when I calculated these numbers, and this was about a year ago with that $600,000 price, the $2,000 rent, It didn't appear to me that there was a bubble. I mean, how it certainly was not the it certainly did not appear that you should run out and buy lots of houses. I didn't think there was an arbitrage in favor of buying, but I also didn't think there was an arbitrage in favor of renting, which is what you would typically see in a bubble. In a bubble, you would believe that there's actually an arbitrage in favor of renting. One sign of a bubble is that rents and prices move in the opposite direction. That is, people in a bubble, people are so convinced that house prices are going to go up that they keep bidding up house prices, so prices go up, and those same people don't worry about whether they can make the money back on rents because they're so convinced there's going to be appreciation, they don't mind having a low rental rate. And so the rent rate tends to actually move in the opposite direction. So you see home prices going up from 400 to 500 to 600,000, and rents going down from 2,000 to 1,800 to 1,600 a month. So that is, over time, you'll see rents fall and prices go up if there's a bubble. Another indication to me that we're not in much of a bubble is that for most of the past several years, and especially recently, rents have been going up. And if rents are going up, then they're not moving in the opposite direction of prices. That is, prices have been going up and rents have been going up. To me, that suggests no bubble. But in any case, there are a lot of people who are worried about bubbles. A lot of experts as well as ordinary people. That may be more experts worried about it than ordinary people. And if there is a bubble in housing, that means that they're going to be self-fulfilling expectations. That is, people are going to expect house prices to go up. Because they expect them to go up, they will think that there's an arbitrage in favor of buying. They'll buy houses. As they buy houses, the prices go up, and so the expectations become, fulfill themselves. But eventually it runs out. People can't buy anymore, or they just reach the point where they can't believe that house prices are going to continue to go up, and in that case the bubble will pop. So anyway, that'll be something to watch. My guess is over the course of the semester we'll learn a lot more about whether there was a is or was a bubble in house prices, and it'll be something we can keep our eyes on. The final topic of this lecture is on talking about cash flow versus capital gains. Our profitability formula tells us whether we should buy or rent, buy versus rent a capital good or a house or whatever. But it does not tell us what the cash flow is going to look like. And in fact, we may have a case where the profitability is positive according to the formula, but the cash flow is negative. That is, we constantly have to borrow more money to finance the item that we purchased. So I'll go through an example. If you bought the house, this $600,000 house, and rented it out, your first year cash flow would be negative. Because the 6% interest, let's say you had to finance, let's say you borrowed everything, the entire price of the house. So $600,000 at a 6% interest rate would mean that you would have $36,000 in interest expense. Your mortgage payments, and well, assuming no principal repayment, would be $36,000 in the first year. But you would only have $24,000 in rental income. Remember, we have $2,000 a year, $2,000 a month times 12 months is $24,000 a year rental income. So you've got $24,000 coming in the door. You've got $36,000 in interest going out the door. That's a $12,000 negative cash flow. But on the other hand, if the appreciation rate is 4% per year, then it would be a good investment. And the reason is that the capital gain offsets the cash flow loss. That is, because next year the house is going to be worth 4% more, it's going to be worth, you've gained, in terms of the price of the house, you've gained $24,000 after a year. Your negative cash flow is $12,000, so your net gain is $12,000. You have a capital gain of $24,000 that more than offsets the cash flow loss of 12,000. So the important point to remember is that, first of all, this concept of a capital gain, which is the increase in the price of your capital good, it's the same as appreciation, and that capital gains can offset negative cash flows. And so a cash flow analysis can look different than a full profitability analysis. And I think one of our problems, I'll talk about how that applies to, or you'll figure out how it applies to, let's say, owning a baseball franchise. And then there are some other uses of rent versus buy that I'll just mention. It's a general formula that applies to all sorts of capital goods. It applies to valuing common stock. There is in some sense a rent versus buy calculation in common stock, where the rental income is the dividends from the stock. The price is the price of the stock. The appreciation rate is how much you expect the stock to go up going forward. And the interest cost is either the cost of borrowing the money to buy the stock, or the opportunity cost, that is, you instead of investing in the stock, you could put the money into a bank certificate of deposit or something else that earns interest. So the same type of formula is at the heart of valuing common stock. Decide if you're a movie theater owner, do you want to own your movie projector? You want to buy it and then, in a few years sell it and get a new one? Or do you want to rent your movie projector? Again, a rent versus buy calculation. Even if your only choice is to buy, you still need to calculate the often the rental cost, because let's say you're trying to figure out what it costs to operate your movie theater, and let's say your projector is going to cost $150,000, but you don't want to say, well, gee, the first year, you don't want to put that entire $150,000 as the cost for 1 year, because the projector is going to last a few years. And then you'll be able to sell it, let's say, after 3 years. So at the minimum, you wouldn't want to have the $150,000 be in 1 year. You'd want to divide it into 3 years. You'd say, well, it'll be 50,000, 50,000, 50,000. But even that's not right, because at the end of 3 years, you're going to sell the movie projector. So you would be overstating your costs, even if you said that it would cost 50,000 a year. So the most accurate way of calculating the cost of your projector and factoring it into whether you're going to have a profitable movie theater or not is to work out what it costs, in a sense, to rent that movie projector for a year by using this kind of rent-buy analysis, by using this profitability formula. So let's review everything that we've discussed in this lecture, and in particular, just point out the things that are important to remember. First thing to remember is that there are three factors of production: land, labor, and capital. Remember that that's how economists think of the fundamental resources in the economy. The second thing is to understand what capital is. It's durable goods that are used to produce other goods, things that like machinery, factories, things like that. The third thing to remember is the rent versus buy formula. Again, our first problem set is going to be making calculations using the rent versus buy formula, so you'll get a better feel for how the variables in the formula relate and how it gets used, how it is applied. Another concept that we came up across was arbitrage. That is, you can arbitrage when there's a price discrepancy and you can buy low and sell high. Another important concept to remember is opportunity cost. That is what you have to give up in order to get something. Well, the concept of opportunity cost is really central to economics. Finally, we learned a term, capital gain, which is the same in our terminology as appreciation, that you can have an investment where the cash flow is negative, but the investment is still worthwhile because of the capital gain. Okay, that's it.